I don't know what skill. I really don't know what it says.
My wife texts me. What's I? That is a I with the little dash thing. I don't know how to say that.
Kindergarten first, second, it begins there. And slowly we begin to lose you.
The stakes are high. The stakes is life and death.
You can't teach yourself how to read if you don't know how to read.
I spent a total of 9 years in prison.
He has a knife, and then we didn't go to school.
I can't afford a dentist.
I was devastated. Don't know how to spell it, but yeah.
I only graduated from the sixth grade. He's going through the same issues like me. I hope and I pray to God he's better than me.
She's falling behind and reading. She had to repeat the first grade for the second time.
Because my teacher gave me a hard work that I don't know.
How can I make a difference in my community? How can I keep them out of prison? How can I break this generational poverty?
It's easier to build strong children than repair broken men.
We have a chance to actually change a broken system.
For those of you watching on YouTube, you just saw the teaser for the new documentary, Sentenced. Sentenced, a film about illiteracy in America, specifically childhood illiteracy, told by adults who never learned how to read. And today we are with the director of that project, the co-director of that project, Connor Martin. Those of you who are listening on audio services, if you want to go to sentencefilm.com right now and watch that teaser is to sort of set up our conversation, I'd maybe hit pause and go do that now. But I want to dive right in with Connor. Connor, well, welcome to Teach a Kid to Read.
Thanks for having me, T. I call him T, guys. We're friends.
We made the movie together. So I'm going to pretend like I'm an interviewer now, and you're going to be the subject, and we're going to have this conversation about, so co-director Connor, tell me about your experience. Now, Connor, tell us a little bit of your background. Who are you? Honestly, why should the audience care about you? Can you tell us a little bit?
You know, the point of this film is to stop caring about me and care about kids. So you want to just move to that? Okay, I'm Connor. I grew up in Oregon, outside of Portland. Skateboard, snowboard, and then loved lacrosse. And I went to Chapman University to play lacrosse and studied at film and advertising there. Played professional lacrosse for a few years, actually. I was a big sports guy. And during all that, started a band, made lots of videos. So I have a very, very bizarre, eclectic 20s that can be interesting to talk about and mostly confuse people. But through all that, filmmaking was sort of the foundation of my creative outlet, something I always didn't really want to do but could do and knew, hey, this is potent and helps the things I love to do, music, sports. I would do lacrosse camps for kids and promote. So a lot of promotion eventually turned into advertising career. I make mostly funny commercials. And then on the side, I'd make nonprofit videos and went to Nicaragua when I was 19 and made a video for, you know, about the kids who live in a dump and started working with my dad who was in this space trying to bring awareness and support programs who are teaching kids to read. And filmmaking is filmmaking. If you want to be silly, go ahead. But storytelling and filmmaking are the same. It's just the tone and the ingredients can be different. And so through nepotism, as I say, I think hopefully the good kind, my dad brought me on and we did some work for a year in Fort Worth in Detroit and realized, hey, it's time to do a feature film about this. And so he gave me the keys to drive the car of a documentary feature. And I drove it to the finish line with the help of a lot of amazing people. Could not have done this. Yeah, obviously couldn't do this by myself. I definitely edited by myself with some help. But yeah, there you go. Confusing great background. So,
okay, so here we go, everyone. So this is this athletic phenom, extreme sports, comedy video maker, musician, national advertising career, talented young phenom, Connor Martin. Oh,
I love this guy.
Yeah. Woo. Amazing. And he happens to have a father and a family that has been engaged in social issues and on various ways over the decades, and happens to do so through documentary films. Your dad has made 4 documentary films. This is the 4th feature-length documentaries. And he comes to you, or you go to him, and like, I want to be in this project, or how does the you know, middle child of a social activist decide to go into the family business, at least on this level?
I mean, it's a beautiful cause. I needed the work. I needed, you know, it's great to have this. Let's be honest, 3 years ago, you have commercials that come and go. It's a seasonal job, kind of on, and then you're off, and then you want to do something meaningful. And, you know, it's not like I did it for free. I probably am at $1 an hour though at this point, but still it was, I'm so blessed by the opportunity. I'm so, you know, it's just like, I'm so lucky to be able to have done it. And it was really hard, and I chose a hard path for sure, and created with my greenness, and, you know, this is my first feature film. I caused some problems in the process, but eventually landed somewhere I'm really, really proud of. And so it was just a big combination. And right as this started, right as this project was starting, I was engaging in this work with the reading, you know, literacy and kids, as I started a family. And so total perspective shift. And I'm so grateful to be exposed to the information and the people I was. I go, oh my gosh, it is so important to take care of your little ones. These are the years. If you're going to check out, right, check out later. You know, this is not the time. If you have a plan to check out of your parenting, you know, I would lay the foundation. It seems to me to be the most important thing you could possibly do for a human being. And so that sort of reality hit. And so then you're just sort of not stuck, but you're given something. And you, like my dad said, is you sort of take what you're given. And this was an obvious, choice for everyone. And you don't want to hire someone who doesn't have heart, as well as, you know, family loyalty is real, you know, just not letting down your family, not letting down your people. There's a lot going for this project to get it finished, and for me to really care about it. And I needed a lot of help, and I brought in some amazing people, you know, to fill in the holes in my game, because I have lots of that. We can talk all day about the holes in my game if you want.
Yeah, so this is a huge issue. I mean, Teach a Kid to Read is not the first organization to go, hey, I think reading would be really important and transformational. Yeah. You know, by the way, 1 in 5 American adults can't read well enough to fill out a job application or fill out medical forms so they can get help. 1 in 5 American adults, according to the Department of Labor. It's not a new issue. Not like we discovered it. 43 million adults. That's not like you discovered it.
No.
But it's not a cure-all. Let's just, like, it's not like we teach everybody to read and suddenly all the problems are going to be gone. That's not what it is. But there is this reality, and Connor, I'm going to go ahead and preach here for a second. There is this reality in the American system that once a child gets to be about 11 years old, if they have not learned to read, they will never catch up statistically. They will never. And there are exceptions to the rule. We can all think of like adult literacy programs that have succeeded, and we know these stories of people, but those are the exceptions. Statistically, if you don't learn to read by 11 years old, basically fourth grade, then you will never learn to read, particularly if you come from an under-resourced background. where there is trauma or there is poverty or there are these, and literacy is not going to solve all those issues, but it's one of the big pieces of the puzzle. Participation in the human story in the 21st century all but requires the ability to read. And so you start to make this film crazy journey. Try to go back a little bit. I mean, again, I've been in this with you the whole time, and you and I have had 1,000 conversations around this issue and how to try and tell it well and how to avoid landmines. Like, can you kind of go back and just remember some of the discoveries or epiphanies you made along the way that were helpful to your filmmaking?
Yeah, so we had done two little films on this issue, and I thought we did them as good as you could possibly do. It's not like bragging. I'm sort of going, I think we did what you do. These kids, beautiful cinematography in a school, beautiful interviews that were lit well, and we found articulate people who cared, and a nice array of characters who passionately cared about, this is a problem. Kids aren't learning to read. It's so bad for their future. But we can do something to help. Let's teach them to read. You know, it's just basically this very simple storyline. And I'm going, cool, we nailed it. You know, you want to do that 90 more times in every city who needs to wake up to this issue. And in Houston, we have a real problem with reading. It's really bad. And these people, and this is what you can do, and these people can help. Join us today. So it's a very simple story. And I'm going, how many times do you want to do this? Because you kind of want to shake people. I can't believe we even had to make this video, this film, if you think about it. Like, why do you guys need a film to be convinced this is bad? But that's sort of where we're at. And it happens to be one of my skill sets. My main skill set is, oh, yeah, we'll make a video to try to convince you to do something. Sometimes it's to buy deodorant, sadly. But this is a better place to put our persuasion skills at work. And I thought what would be most persuasive is, we got to show kids and we got to show people helping. That's obviously a requisite of this film. That was a requisite of my dad, of the producers. But what's going to engage people? And it's going to be people. It's not going to be statistics. Statistics are just sort of, you know, like Stalin said, you know, famously, one, like a million is a statistic, but one is tragedy, you know, or flip it however you want. But the thing is when your hero dies, it feels so sad. But if you hear 10,000 people die in an earthquake, you go, oh, that sucks. That's awful. It's crazy to me. That resonated with me. I thought I was a better person than that. And I'm going, oh yeah, I'm that. That's me. So now the antithesis to that is to fall in love with someone who's been hurt by this problem, who didn't deserve it, who's lovable. And so I knew that's what I wanted. And when we found beautiful, we had a couple lovely people in Detroit who we knew we could lean on to show us what it was like to, like, good, just good, salt of the earth people who want to help. You know, I'm like, oh, these are great hero characters. Their stories are they're done. You know, they have pain in the past, but we can't follow it. So I didn't want to tell this all retroactively. I wanted to have some active storytelling. We had to see someone struggling now without reading. And I go, how the heck do you show someone? How the heck do you get someone to not read on camera? Because I think that's the most exotic, high stakes thing in this whole film, other than the fact we found some footage, incredibly, of Fuji, one of the main characters, his poor brother, who was killed in the 90s. You know, this like crime documentarian went there with his camera and filmed it. Other than that, how do we show this and to actually move people? Because people don't believe it, and geographically we are separate. You know, if you live where I live. Or even if you live in most cities, you're probably raising your kid in as good a neighbor as you can get in, and you're just not near this. You're not seeing it, most of us. And I'm definitely one of them. And so how do we get in it? How do we get in there? How do we get our hands dirty and face reality? And I'm an intense guy, so I'm like, let's show the most screwed up thing ever. You know, I'm like, let's go. And so I had to, it's just that, but that's not my gift. And so that's why we can talk about I brought in Mark, the co-director of the film, to help us achieve something I wanted, and held my hand through all that and brought us amazing footage and amazing characters. But that's at least what I wanted. So I think that's, you know, pat on the back. Like, that's what I wanted. And so if it's effective, I'm glad I pushed for it.
Yeah, on one level, you can tell stories through smart people, talking heads, all sort of reflecting on success stories or how-tos or whatever it can be. And that can be very sort of condescending and distant and speaks to the head, not to the heart. Or on the other side, you can go get the gnarliest stuff imaginable, and it's just exploitive, and you're just using people, and you're just, you know, doing guerrilla filmmaking where we get in and we get the grittiest we can possibly get, you know. But that's very sort of like exploitive.
Not everyone wants it too.
And then so the middle place that I don't, Connor, I think it's imperfect. It's an imperfect process, but really partnering, really finding these families in these very, very real, dirt under the fingernails, gritty reality of life, and partnering with them, and you and your co-director Mark, who we love, who just actually got into life and spent weeks with folks and there was an exchange of trust both directions. Like, we're going to trust one another in order to be willing to show the reality of life. And then the storytellers suddenly become these adults and families that are unable to read, and how they're passing that legacy onto their children and eventually their grandchildren. And this is a generational process that we can say, you can show statistics, we can get people in tweed jackets with patches on the elbows to tell us about it, or the actual participants in the story, this very real American story, can be the ones who tell the story, can tell the tale, and can explain what it feels like. And you somehow pulled that off. And I just answered the question for you. I'm not supposed to do that as an interviewer, but
now we're a team.
Yeah. So
basically, one thing I would say is you pass the mic. You pass the mic to the people who've actually experienced this problem, and move away from the tweed jackets and the intellectuals who intellectualize everything. And God bless him, but I think there's a little too much of that. And so we had a lot of plans to talk to a lot of smart people, try to get them to pontificate and pour their heart out on camera and give us the logical argument for why you should care about this. And man, as we just kept going, we just thought, that's useless. Of course, let's get Obama on camera. You know, oh my gosh, wouldn't that be so cool if he said it's bad for kids not to read? I just feel like it's so obvious. There's something so obvious about this problem. So rudimentary. I don't know. That's where I kind of left. I always thought, how do you turn this into 60 minutes, you know, or 90 minutes? We ended up at 70. Right? It has to be people's stories, and obviously expands beyond literacy. Thank God to Mark to be able to get us even more deep stories than just watching someone not read for 60 minutes. Because that wouldn't even do them justice, you know. They're people. They're beautiful people with love and joy and pain and a lot of nuance. And yeah, it's so complicated.
So there's these 43 million post children, that are unable to read in America.
That's amazing. Adults are post children. That's what we should. That's the best like perspective shift. I wanted to say that because remember, they're kids. They were kids, post-children.
Yeah, 43 million post-children. Probably the vast majority of those 43 million at least dabbled in the American education system at some point along the way. They end up in a world where they can't get a job and can't fill out medical forms. Maybe can't read street signs. You know, the very, very basic parts. Like, can't read a menu. Can't read the text on a phone. Can't read their electric bill. You know, can't spell out a word for their kids to help their kids learn it, because you can't learn what you can't, what you don't know, or whatever, however Haley says it. You can't learn to read
yourself. You can't teach yourself to read if you don't know how to read. You can't, teach yourself.
You know, so there's this world out there. It's real world. And quite frankly, it's a world that doesn't have to exist. The United States is way down the list as far as the number of illiterate people in America compared to the other developed countries of the world. We're way down the list, way. And so, what are your hopes, Connor? If this film could catalyze something, what would you hope that it would catalyze?
Yeah, I hope it would. You don't want to be a jerk, but you hope you watch it and look in the mirror would be the first thing to sort of, I like to say, look at the blood on our hands. This is our problem. And you go, okay, I'm implicit. Okay, and accept that. Don't beat yourself up. So what are you going to do? Be apathetic? Nihilistic? It's everyone's, the world's screwed anyways. Or are you going to move to your heart and believe in hope and believe in love and go, okay, I'm going to choose the other story, which is things can be better, that we could help a kid, that the butterfly effect is real, that if I affect one kid, I could affect hundreds. You just don't know the possibilities of actually choosing to engage in work. So the film has a clear goal. We want 1 million more adult mentors to pour into the schools and young people's lives. And there's tons of programs out there. We're not starting our own program. Teach a Kid to Read is, you know, and I say we, because I work for the Teach a Kid, you know, funded this movie and commissioned this movie. But the reality is millions of people to pour into the schools, and that's where the young kids are. And it's 5 to 10 is that reading window, you know, and if you can get them at grade level, you give them a real shot at having an education and graduating from high school. And we know statistically what happens when you don't graduate high school, right? Well, that's something we statistically are measuring. We're not saying if you graduate high school, everything's going to go your way and you're going to be the greatest parent and you're going to not, right, you know, be harmful to society in any way, or harmful to yourself. It's not what we're saying, but we're sort of taking this sort of unarguable path. And Mark would always say the thing is everyone pulls over for an ambulance. Everyone stops for a school bus. This is one of those issues. This is an easy one. Kids are not born bad. You know, they're not even born, you know, they're born uneducated, you know. It's like people come out smarter than each other, or, you know, less smart. That's not the point. The point is just give them a chance to realize their full potential. And if you don't, and part of that is education, you know, and there's a whole other side to it, character, but that's the beauty of even just working and loving a kid in these settings that we showed in the film, is now they're exposed to another adult who loves and cares about them, and they get to see positive behavior modeled, you know, which is the best thing you could ever do for a young person. Obviously, we can tell them this list of morals or 10 commandments or whatever virtues you believe in, morality you believe in, but it's more about modeling what could be, what they, you know. And I loved that. That is legit. That is legit getting close to the root of the problems in our culture. It's getting so much closer than sweeping programs for adults who are struggling, which of course we need those. We need to catch and take care of people. And you even mentioned America. And we're so far down the list according to developed countries. And there's a lot of people in this country who love all the freedom we have, but with freedom comes deep responsibility. It's so insane that if we've forgotten that. And so you can either give all your freedom away, you know, and have other people do everything for you. And that's really hard to pull off, I would say, especially for 400 million people in our country or whatever we got, or we accept our freedom and we take care of each other and we take responsibility and we try to help people be self-reliant and and educated and give them the tools they need to participate in this, like, this beautiful experiment that is America. So that's even me choosing hope versus, you know, oh, America's screwed and the education system's messed up and nothing can be fixed and we got to overhaul everything. And you're sort of describing, when you say that, something pretty catastrophic that we'd have to do. So I'd rather choose the light side of making what we have better.
Yeah. And Connor, I'm convinced I'll call this a societal illness.
Yeah.
And the sickness is in all of us. It's not just in the 43 million adults who can't read in America. It's not just in the 1.3 million fourth graders in the US who fail to read at basic levels each year. It's not just in them. It's in all of us. And the reality is, I don't care.
Yeah, that's what I found out.
I want to blame teachers, and I want to blame parents, and I want to blame communities. You know, code words. I want to blame communities for it.
Culture. It's crazy what we do.
And in reality, we don't care. And I don't care by reading books. And honestly, I don't even learn to care by watching a film. As much as we made a film that we want to seed people's souls, you don't learn to care by watching something or reading something. You learn to care by knowing someone.
Yeah, nice one.
We learn to care by knowing someone, and literacy is this beautiful, beautiful gateway drug to care. Because anybody can do it. Anybody can do it. If you can read a children's book, I'm not talking about having a master's degree. Can you read a children's book? One fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish. Can you read that? Well, there's a classroom within driving distance of your house with a teacher who is overwhelmed, who is begging for a 5% margin in his or her job in order to actually teach the classroom. That 5%. Who will give me the 5%? Well, I'm going to tell you right now, if four neighborhood adults who can read Red Fish, Blue Fish walk in the door and say, you know what, we're going to be the 5%. I'm going to give you 45 minutes a week, 45 minutes a week, one lunch hour. I'm going to show up. I'm going to take one child who's struggling to read, and I'm going to build that margin into your day, and we're going to go and we're going to sit and we're going to read together. And the power of that relationship in the life of a child, that child that not only is given a better chance to learn to read, which, you know, they need by the fourth grade. There's nothing better than just the one-on-one attention that so many kids, when mom works three jobs and doesn't have any energy to read when she gets home, if she can read at all, who don't have a grandparent who cares about them, who are, they're too busy being hungry or experiencing trauma or taking care of their younger sibling to have a chance to read. And then you walk in and you go, I'm going to read with you. I'm not replacing your parents, supporting them. Because your parents are busting their butt. Your parent is busting their butt to try and just keep a little bit of sanity around you. And then I'm just going to support it with 45 minutes of my life. But in the process of getting to know this one person who comes from a different background than mine, suddenly I believe that people's hearts are opened up to the far broader spectrum. And they start to care about other things. Suddenly they go, wow, these things are real. Like, poverty is real. These issues are real. Human trafficking is real. The prison system's a real thing. Hunger's a real thing. Psychological abuse and trauma are real things in the lives of people. But how does our heart get opened up? Again, it doesn't get opened up by watching a film. It doesn't get opened up by reading a book. It gets opened up by knowing someone. And in that, hopefully, no, not hopefully, in that, the children become the Messiah characters in the story in many ways. Because they're the ones who change us. They're the ones who give us new life. All right. I'm preaching. Connor, what do you think about all that?
Yeah, I think what I'm hearing is it's real. Problems are real. It's really complicated. I'm going to say it. I don't want you to watch our film. There's a lot of films you watch. You pat yourself on the back. Like, I did my good deed for the day. I watched a film that wasn't just for my entertainment, but I learned something and I experienced someone's pain and engaged in an issue. And, you know, there's amazing documentaries out there who educate you on something really sad. And then you leave going, I have no idea what to do about this, but thank you for the education. Right. So that has a value to it, but that has a ceiling. That value has a ceiling. And the ceiling is, it's not that it's a ceiling. It's that until you can engage with someone with this new thought, like, oh, I learned this amazing thing and I know the history of this one issue. Until you can engage with that issue in your real life, then there was no real point to watching that documentary. And so you can watch this and move on with your life, and you will never run into someone who struggles reading unless it comes into your home with your own child. You will never see this because they will never show it to you. And also, the people who can't read don't live near you most of the time. You know, they're not around. And so I hope, you know, you engage in the reality of the intensity of life. And I think we've, you know, there's a lot of, we're all wearing rose colored glasses, and I did too. Not did, I still do. I mean, at least I've gotten my eyes opened a little bit, and I got to edit this film and hang out with these people for 3 years. And so they're certainly imprinted on my soul, but you forget. And I realize I don't care. I still don't care so much of the time until you re-engage with a person, until you re-engage with reality. And you're very nice and poetic about parents are working hard and blah, 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 and the parents have it so bad. And what I would actually twist on that is, like, there's a lot of parents out there that you would be appalled at what they do for their kids. And it's very scary to say, and it's very judgmental, and I'm really sad. But the reality is what they got, I think a lot of them are doing a lot better than what their parents gave them. And that goes all the way down the line. And I think this film is about generational poverty. And there's some good people out there really trying. And think about the parents who bring their kids to reading programs. You know, those are amazing parents who have the humility to take their kid to an outside reading program. But what we're seeing is kids don't always have the best parents. And I think we showed that in the film. And for us to start blaming everyone or them is insane. You have to be more intelligent than that and just go, what did they receive? And are they doing better than what they got? And I think in the film, we see that. I think Bianca is trying a lot harder. She's trying as hard as she can. And it's amazing. She's doing an amazing job. Parents were killed in front of her. You know what I mean? Are you kidding me? You know, and Anna, if you heard what happened to her, she's trying to pull it together. She's on methadone so she doesn't completely disappear on heroin. I mean, I know that might be hard for some people to swallow. And that's really hard for me to swallow, Mr. Sports guy, Mr. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get her done guy. You know, because that's just who I am. And that's why I don't care, because I think that way. That's my status. That's sort of my baseline. And so I'm hoping this film chips away at that. And this whole process chipped away at some really awful stuff in me. Still working on it. And even how we work, even how we executed it, even how we got it done, even how there was impatience and sloth and also pushing on things that didn't need to be pushed on and infighting and all that stuff. And I really hope the product is, you know, the good outweighs the bad in this whole thing, including, you know, and the good outweighs the bad, even if your intentions are selfish, like Mary says in the film. I'm getting more out of this than she is, you know. Even if you're struggling and you're like, I don't even care about these kids, but I just want better mental health. So I've heard serving is a gateway drug to is a gateway drug to wholeness, you know, and peace. I'm going, right. Well, I think that good outweighs that bad. I mean, I'm trying to be a little less. Yeah, you got to be easy on each other, but you have to try. And that's what I think the film is about. Well, you have to try, and this is something you can try. I tried to make the film. That's at least I know that.
Connor Martin is the co-director of the new film Sentenced. At the age of 10, a child is sentenced to a future. And a lot of that sentence is determined by whether or not they know how to read. This is Teach a Kid to Read, teachakidtoread.com, where you can learn more about the issue of illiteracy and how to get involved. We believe that there's no such thing as an illiterate child. There's only children who haven't had the opportunity to learn how to read yet and to be surrounded by caring adults, often, who have the capacity to help them read. And so, you know, before we go, Connor, are there any things you haven't had a chance to say that you would like to say about this issue or the film or the characters or anything?
Just thanking the people who gave so vulnerably, shared themselves. You know, Mark, the co-director, did an amazing job embedding himself in their lives, earning their trust. And then he'd bring me in and they accepted me and let me film, make it all pretty and do whatever I do. And so thanking Mark and the deep relationships he has with them. And obviously we lost Fuji, super sad. So hoping his family's good, but just saying thank you to all of them. And I don't know if we'll ever see them again. And they gave us a lot. They all told us, you know, Bianca had hope for her kids, but you know, most of them sort of knew when we left, you know, it was just going to keep going the way it was going for them. And they felt stuck. And so I hope they don't feel taken advantage of or that we exploited them in any ways. We did try to, yeah, honor them as much as we could. But, you know, it's innately documentary filmmaking. It's innately kind of nasty, right? You go in there and you take and take and take. And so we're so grateful for what they gave us. And hopefully we can, it can help people.
All right. Sentencefilm.com to get a taste of the film that Connor helped make. And right now we're in festival season. The film's being shown at film festivals across the country. Soon it'll be available, worldwide through streaming services. Come back here to find out when it's available. Come back to Teach a Kid to Read, and we will keep you informed about when you can see it in its entirety. We wish we could show it to you now, but it's not the way filmmaking works.
Yeah, we're playing the game.
We're playing the game. Because we want to get this film to the White House. We want to get it to decision makers who have the ability to make this message go far and wide, red and blue, deep and far. And we really want to see transformation of a country. And we want to believe in the next generation and the generation after that and grandchildren's grandchildren, that we could be a more compassionate, egalitarian world, where we all help one another succeed. So this is Teach a Kid to Read. My name's Tony. Thanks to Connor for his time, and peace.
Teach a child to read. Give a child a chance. It's as simple as that.